Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Jeff Duden, who is the CEO of Duden Partners, onto the show. At Duden Partners, Jeff and his team focuses on the empowerment of early stage entrepreneurs in the franchise industry. Duden Partners serves as a vessel for Jeff and his team to share everything that they've learned through their franchise experiences. And one of the things you'll learn through this interview is that Jeff himself has a tremendous background in franchising. He was a significant part of Advanta Clean Systems, and in January 2019, he sold Advanta Clean Systems, a company that he founded in 1994 and built along with a great team to a national franchise brand with over 230 locations in 37 states. Throughout that time, he learned how to build, operate, and most importantly, exit a national brand. And we talk a lot about those experiences. We talk about some of the fascinating franchises that he's involved with today. And it's really a great conversation to just dive in with somebody who has lived and breathed the life of franchising for so long. So I really enjoyed this interview, and I know you will as well. Hello, Jeff. Welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
Doing great, Josh. Happy to be here.
Well, you know, I love having you on this program because you bring such an interesting background. I mean, so often I'm talking to people who are part of one specific franchise system, and yet you bring a background and experience level that touches upon a bunch of different franchise systems, you know, emerging brands and otherwise. If you would, because you have such a great depth and experience, talk about that and all the various tentacles that touch upon your experiences in franchising.
Sure, Josh, be happy to. I guess the way I'll start is to say that I identify as a franchisor, and that's how I grew up in the industry. That's my passion, is creating freedom through entrepreneurship and encouraging entrepreneurs to improve their life through business ownership. So I'm involved in brands. Sometimes I'll invest, sometimes I'll take an active role. So there's a couple of different brands that I've, one that I founded is Mobot. It's a robotic lawn mowing franchise that I have a great partner with. Not only a business partner, but then also Husqvarna is a partner in that business. I'm involved in a franchise in the fitness industry called Rockbox Fitness, which is a really exciting, unique fitness concept, boutique fitness offering, and a few others that I work with from time to time in different capacities. So that's a big part of my passion, but you can also help franchisors on the service side of the business. So I work with Frandevco, which is a franchise sales organization, got some investments in media and marketing companies and things of that nature that support franchisors in their growth. And then I have a family office business called Duden Partners, where we consult with emerging brands and, you know, evaluate them for investment or sometimes just provide some services during their emerging phase to help them grow fast and grow the right way, provide tools, and almost like putting together a team. When you're emerging a brand or you're standing one up and you haven't done it before, you've got to build a team to support the franchise owners, to award the franchises. And that's really what Duden Partners does, is stands alongside an emerging brand and gives them the benefit of all the years of experience that we have.
Well, I've got to jump off and talk to you for a minute about Mobot.
Okay.
So I have a great friend of mine. He's actually a lawyer too, but he's more a sports agent than that here in town. I'm wondering if it's the same technology, because he got this thing where it literally is mowing his grass 24 hours, kind of cuts off little snippets each and every day, and he got his yard wired, and the thing just goes like 24/7. I mean, it's got lights on it. You know, I've been over to his house and the thing just kind of mows and keeps the grass consistently short. Is that what Mobot is?
Josh, our grandchildren will never know that humans used to one day cut grass. Yes, that's exactly what
it is. Is that what it is?
It's exactly what it is. It's why would humans do something that robots can do better?
Not to mention it's a great talking point when you're out there drinking on the back patio with them and you see this little thing go by. And it's like, what's that in your yard?
There are attachments. You can put the beverages on top of the Mobot and it can run them around and deliver them to people. It's a, it's a great, it is.
Oh, so you didn't come up with that concept. You invested in it.
Well, we founded the business together maybe 4 years ago. It was a trend that my business partner, Tony Hopp, who's a brilliant technologist, and he's built and exited over 17 different companies in his career, and a very, very smart guy. And he was helping me with some technology in the franchise industry. And he said, I've got this incredible idea about robots cutting grass, and that I think this should be a franchise, and I don't know anything about franchising. Would you help me with it? And I said, absolutely. So we got together on it, and we immediately contacted, I had some connections into Husqvarna, who is the world leader in robotic technology and really the world leader in outdoor power equipment. And we worked with them to start to pilot the machines. And immediately after a week, I watched people's reaction to this in our office complexes. They would stop and their kids would look at it and they'd come out and take pictures of it. Then I also noticed the quality of the cut and realized immediately the impact that this could make on the world in terms of spilled fuel, in terms of emissions, and in terms of just the environmental, the clean, green, quiet aspect of this business is something, it's meaningful.
Oh, and it's super quiet. I mean, you don't even know it's there until, I mean, the first time I saw it, I was over there at night and we were on the back patio, and all of a sudden I just see lights going through the yard. I'm like, what is that? And that's you don't hear it really. I mean, it's pretty, pretty quiet.
It's a real way to make an impact in the environment and a way to allocate our labor in this country to things that need it done.
So what's the franchise play on that? I mean, you're selling a territory. So is the franchisee coming in and they're going and selling residential and commercial, or is this primarily residential, or what's the franchise model there?
It's both. There's several different aspects to it, but generally the franchise's obligation is to keep the bots running. They have employees called robot wranglers, and they, you know, we furnish and install and maintain the bots, and we keep them running on the customer's yards.
And it's, I mean, it's a technology company. So obviously as the franchisor, your guys' role is vital in making sure that you're constantly updating and making sure that you've got the newest and best technology for these Mobots, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, fascinating. I had no idea you were going to mention that, but this is just a funny story. And very interesting, too, because, you know, it's one of those things where when people ask me, what's the most unique franchise you've ever heard of? I've got a lot of unique franchises that people have talked to me about. That's up there, too. And I think it's smart. You know, it is a great play on technology and a great use of technology to do something in a unique way.
It's a very attractive business. It's just a matter of the consumers en masse being comfortable with it and getting familiar with it and then pulling it into the market as hard as we've been pushing it into the marketplace. But we've got a lot of traction. We've done a lot of deals this year.
Do you lay wires in somebody's yard, or how does everything get mapped out in the yard?
There's some patented technology that has to do with the way that the wires are installed, but it's boundary wires and guide wires and a series of those installed in such a way that it guides the bot. And the bots are intelligent. They have AI. And over the course of 3 to 4 weeks, they learn your yard. They learn where it grows more, where it grows less. It's a random looking pattern. However, it's very thoughtful in the way that it goes about your yard once it learns how the optimum way to handle your particular property is.
Well, and you also mentioned Rockbox, and we won't even talk about that because I've got an upcoming episode with the co-founder, Roger Martin, of Rockbox Fitness that you're also a part of. But tell me about Advanta Clean Systems. I mean, that was a company that you founded in 1994, grew up to over 230 locations, and then sold. Tell me about starting and growing that business.
Sure. I'll run through the background real quick. So I'm a Chicago guy. In 89, I got a football scholarship out to Appalachian State, and I needed money. So I started the painting business in the summer, painting student housing. And when I graduated, we had a very successful business, and I didn't take any job interviews. My partner's brother and my brother had come out, and they were transitioning into the business to put themselves through school. And a friend called me from South Florida and said, this hurricane has just devastated South Florida. These people need help recovering. Do you guys want to come down and give us a hand? And we said, sure. I told my girlfriend I'd be back in 3 weeks. And 3 years later, I came back with cutting my teeth in the restoration industry. And we had started a company in 94 in Central Florida that would become Advantaclean. And I came up in 95 to start our second location. And over the next 10 years, we grew into a national and international rompin' and stompin' restoration company, responding to every disaster, doing government contracting. And I was driving back up from Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I had been down there 3 months setting up our storm response. We worked down there for 5 years. It was an incredible run of contracting for us, governmental, municipalities, a lot of commercial work. And I was driving back up, and I was in a rented motorhome that we had, and I was missing my son's first football season. He was 7 years old. And I said to myself, I said, I'm not going to tolerate this, because what's going to happen, I can see it now. We're working in the Caribbean and all over the place, all over the country. I said, I'm never going to be home. So it was on that way home, I said that I was going to sell all of our locations in the Southeast under a franchise model. I would keep our commercial services group to service the government and really provide support for our franchise owners. And then over in 2006, 7, and 8, we just sold all of our units, just as we said we would. In 2009, we launched to the public. And 9 years later, we sold the business with 230 operating territories in 37 states.
So when you start the business to your exit from the business, you obviously don't know how that's going to go. I know one of the common things with franchisors and emerging brands, I work with a lot of them, is, you know, you're always trying to think about not just what the future holds, but what you as the entrepreneur want out of the business. I mean, to your point, you know, you're sitting there, you're growing this thing, and next thing you realize, oh my gosh, this is going to be a recipe for disaster because I'm not going to see my kids growing up. So that tweaked some of your decision making. But for the growing entrepreneurs out there, growing franchisors out there that are in the midst of all of this, how did you arise to those decisions? How did you sort of combine, you know, planning for the future while also trying to be flexible enough to make tweaks along the way?
There's a trap that you get into. On one hand, it is said that you should build every business to sell it, and you should always be ready to sell. The statement behind the statement is that you really want to build the best business you possibly can. You want to build a business that's profitable. You want to build this that's efficient, that has diversity in customers, and it's innovative. And you just want to build a great business. So keeping those things near term to an entrepreneur, but also educating yourself about what does it look like, you know, when you want to exit the business. But it's probably less about when you want to exit the business than when it's the right time to exit the business. There's two questions you should always ask yourself when you're starting a business. And they are, who is the customer? Like, who are we going to sell this to? Who's our ideal customer? What is the value that we bring to these people? And the second question is, who is the natural owner for this business? When you consider who the natural owner for a business is, it's very often not the founder. So as you're building a business, some of the decisions you might make would be contrary to whoever the natural owner might be down the road. So those are a couple things that you need to consider while you're building. In terms of decision making, and this really gets to the book Discernment, business is about probabilities. There are no absolutes. Who would have thought that 2020 would have turned into this disaster of a year where there's a bipolar nature? Some businesses are absolutely struggling and went to zero while other businesses are flourishing inside of the new demands of this COVID economy. So nothing is absolute and you can't plan for everything. But good decision-making is really your batting average over time. So how do you get that? And what are the models of thought that you can accumulate over time. So when you're faced with decisions, you can play them against your models of thinking. You can come up with scenarios, what's most likely to happen, and you can make the better decision more often than not.
So tell me about the book. You mentioned it just briefly. It's a book called Discernment, The Business Athlete's Regimen for a Great Life Through Better Decisions. Launched it August 18th. Obviously, we're recording this, but by the time this gets live, it will be past August 18th. Tell me about the book, a little bit more detail, why you decided to do a book now.
So a big part of my purpose is existing for the encouragement of entrepreneurs. And when I look back through my career, what are the things that I wish that I would have had in my head as I was making some of these huge decisions? The decision to franchise versus run a direct business was driven upon the fact that I wasn't going to tolerate an absentee life. I didn't go put all the time into building this family so that I could not be part of the picture or part of raising them. So that was against my values. And our values, our true values, are what we will tolerate. You know, our values are our must-haves and what we absolutely won't tolerate. Those are our values. So as you think about making good decisions, you really kind of got to know like what you stand for and what you won't tolerate. And it really starts with that. And then as you go through life, you know, what are the things you need to do intentionally, like an athlete? Let's just say you wanted to be a better basketball player. Well, what do you do to work on your left-hand dribble? What do you do to work on your layups? What do you do to work on your agility? Well, there's things that you can work on as a business person that are going to give you the fundamentals that you need to make great decisions and to react. And every great business builder or great business owner that I've worked with, they have codified the things that they believe make their business go. And it's really interesting to see. So the book is really about my view of the things that I have accumulated, put into models, so that as I'm going through life, I can check decisions, relationships, opportunities against these things and try to make sense of whether they're a fit for me or not.
So you've lived a life, obviously, of entrepreneurship. And I know there's an age-old question. I'd just be really curious your thoughts on this, on if you think that entrepreneurs are born or made. I mean, it's a combination of both. But there's these traits. I mean, there's these traits you see with people who go off and create their own businesses, create their own franchise systems, grow them, build them. Do you see consistent traits among a lot of successful entrepreneurs? Or do you think it runs the gamut across the board and there are a lot of skills that can simply be taught?
Well, I think I cleaned it up in the book, but I've observed that most entrepreneurs are screwed into existence.
I've never heard it put that way, but I resonate with that. I understand.
I love
that.
It, but then they hesitate, you know, because I don't want to be offensive to people if I can't help it, but you know, sometimes you can't help it.
They're stuck. They can't, you know, if they try to go get a regular job, they just find ways to work themselves out of it.
Or they need money. I mean? You know, like you grow up, there's a reason why many entrepreneurs grew up without a lot. And the hero journey in entrepreneurship is everywhere because you need money. So the less structure you have in your life growing up, the more interesting thinking you can do. And that's one of the problems I think facing our kids today is the massive amount of structure in their life when it comes to sports and things like that. Where's the white space where you have all day to solve this problem? You're out in the middle of the woods somewhere, the chain fell off your bike and it broke. Okay. You know, you don't have a phone. You're 8 miles from home and you're not supposed to be there. So now you've got this problem, right? That you need to solve. So what's interesting is that, you know, entrepreneurs are comfortable working without a net because somewhere in their life, they didn't have one. They had to solve a problem. So you get addicted to challenging yourself to these ways. And I think they have grit and perseverance. They persist in things and they can tolerate things because everything's going to take 10 times more effort than you thought it would. And I believe that the last 10% of excellence takes 50% more effort. If you think about it, I mean, you could show up at school and get C pluses, B minuses, and probably never study. As long as you show up, if you don't show up, you could fail out. If you study a couple hours a week, you could probably knock that up to a B plus, A minus. But if you really want to get 97, 98, 99 and get everything right, I mean, you're working 2 or 3 hours a night. So 50% more effort takes that last 10%. So people that have a motor and are willing to do it, but why would somebody work that hard? Because they're passionate or they have a need, something's driving them. Part of their fulfillment is about really being successful, providing, proving something. So grit is an important part of it. Need is an important part of it. Those are a couple of the key traits I see with entrepreneurs. And I guess the last one would be is they're very curious. They're looking to interrupt the patterns. Instead of saying, this is why everybody does it this way, they ask the question, why can't it be done differently? There's so many things. We did a call center in Advantaclean, and there wasn't a lot of companies. And the counsel that we got was, it's too much risk. You shouldn't do it. Let them answer their own phones. But we saved hundreds and hundreds of headcount out in the network with slightly over a dozen people handling over 250,000 inbound phone calls, booking every appointment, having a great handle.
And better consistency, right?
Yeah. I mean,
better consistency across the board.
Oh, it was a great handle, but it was considered to be something that you really shouldn't do.
Well, now you see it all over. I mean,
you do.
See it in tons of systems where they're doing
mm-hmm.
it. So in our last remaining minutes here, I'm very curious. I think you bring a particular level of expertise where your insight would be very valued here. And that is, you've been a part of a lot of growing brands. You're a part of them now. You've been a part of great exits, and you've seen from the beginning stages to the end stages of selling. What would be your number one piece of advice for an emerging franchisor out there? I mean, you know, somebody who's out there who has, you know, 5 to 10 locations, they're franchising, they're trying to grow out there, they're in the midst of the hustle of doing all that. They've got their system, they've got their processes, they're continuously fine-tuning it. As you look back at all your experiences, what's sort of the one thing that you look back and say, you know, this was the thing that really helped keep it all together?
Mentorship. Getting help, telling somebody in that situation to get help, seeing around corners, is dangerous because it's a very tight-knit, helpful community, and there's a lot of vendors out there that can offer part of a solution that doesn't get you all the way where you need to be. And it's a valuable solution, perhaps, but it's just part of the solution. So you really have to find people that have done it before, that are willing to invest a little bit of time and energy and wisdom. Some of the mantras people shared with me, whether that be John Rachi or Shelley Sun or David McKinnon, I still use those classics. Here's the three things you need to pay attention to about this, or the four things, or this. And they weren't really written down anywhere. They were had over a cup of coffee or a shared event. So you have to show up, and you have to show up with humility. And I would say, if you want to be helped, I would try to be helpful. And I would get around people and invest the time that have done it before. Because if you show up in the franchise industry, there's so many good people and good vendors and experienced, knowledgeable individuals that will give you their time. But you have to quid pro quo, right? You have to be willing to give it back and volunteer and show that you are somebody who's willing to have it both ways.
Well, and go on the journey. I think it's attractive to mentors to see somebody who's hustling, who's got an interest, who's got a passion, who's seeking all that stuff out, as opposed to, you know, I think we've all had people come to us and they say, you know, tell me the answer. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
There's many answers. So Jeff, you can obviously be found on, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just at Jeff Duden. Tell me about your book, though. Where can people go to purchase your book?
We will be live the 18th, which is tomorrow, on Amazon. You can go to jeffduden.com, JeffDuden.com. And you would be able to find information there. In addition to our podcast, The Jeff Duden Show, articles that we've written for Forbes, tools for franchisors, a lot of information at jeffduden.com. Just hit me up on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. We're there. Or you can send me a direct email at jeff@duden.me.
Well, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with me and my audience. And I know they appreciate it, and I appreciate it. And keep up the great work, man. I mean, you bring a lot of great stuff to the franchise world, and I've been a part of it for the last 15 years, and just love the community and love talking with people who have such a great background and level of expertise. So keep it up, and thanks for taking a few minutes to come on.
Thank you, Josh. I really enjoyed it, and it is a pleasure.
Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.